Hi, this is filmmaker BJ Colangelo, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Gigi Chick, presented by Above Below Entertainment.
Welcome to The Default Setting. This is your host, Jess Falstick.
And co-host, Gigi Chick.
And we here at The Default Setting are your audible source for finding out what makes you tick. So today's guest, I am very happy to have. He was a last-minute addition here on The Default Setting, Jim Lalka.
Ladies, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I was excited. I've listened to a couple of your episodes, and I thought it was a really cool show. And I'm like, I wonder if they'll have me, or is it just for girls? Because the first two episodes I listened to.
Not a girls club.
Not a girls club. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's funny because when I first just posted on the Cleveland Akron board that we were going to do a podcast, I had two male comics message me directly, and they're like, I would like to talk about women's issues. And I was
like, you're like, we would not.
Okay.
No, so I'm like, just kidding.
No, I mean, like, that's fine if they happen to come up, but I caught something I was listening to, I think, our last week's episode, and I heard you in the background going, this is not a red tent. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. Please elaborate.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, please enlighten us.
Wow, that's so funny because I remember saying that, and at the time, was it BJ that was on?
I can't remember. I just know that I listened to the episode and I heard you.
Nobody like even heard me. I said it so under my breath. I'm like, oh, whatever. It's funny. I laugh at myself all the time. What is a red tent? I don't remember what the context was. Okay. But a red tent, so biblically, women, when they were menstruating, they literally were secluded to this tent for the whole
process. Because their vaginas were doing evil things
because
and
they were
stopped.
Just gushing and like, bah. And so the men would just send them all and they all hung out in this giant tent.
Interesting.
Yeah. So whatever we were talking about it, it made sense in context.
Now it just sounds creepy. I thought of Maude Lebowski from The Big Lebowski with, some people find my work very vaginal. The word itself makes men uncomfortable. Vagina. You've seen The Big Lebowski, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. I've seen like 500 times. If I'm ranting about something that you've not seen, it's going to sound really stupid. But it's a really funny scene.
My new favorite thing to do on stage is to tell people to suck my labs.
Yes.
And it makes people really uncomfortable. But then I say suck my balls and everyone laughs. And
I was like, oh, now I know what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, totally.
Fine with that.
Yeah, like suck labs. I think that needs to be a thing.
I can't participate in that.
Well, I can say suck my dick.
You can.
So you can say suck my labs.
See, it's a
it would actually
probably make someone more uncomfortable
coming from you.
What's that?
If a guy shouted at another dude during the middle of a bar fight,
hysterical.
So the guy would get even more pissed. He'd be like,
you're in the middle just like bloodying some guy's face. Suck my lame.
In addition to beating the shit out of you, I'm now saying something awkward and gender confusing to you.
Gender confusion. Oh, God. I love that we're like almost 5 minutes into this, and we still haven't even talked about the topic today. And actually, because Jim was such a last-minute addition to the show, I don't even know what the topic is.
The topic, well, you asked me what's my default setting, which is, I think, the theme of the show.
Correct.
And I was struggling between nerdy and tentative, and your response was, the fact that you're struggling between two things as tentative is probably the way to go. And that, now that I think about it, that's probably what I've like struggled with the most in my life, and doesn't probably make sense to you now because you've only known me for a year or so.
Yeah.
And so getting out of that was really probably the biggest struggle I've had. Was like, I was always kind of afraid to try the new thing. I was a Mr. Corporate guy for years and I never wanted to venture out on my own. About 5 years, 6 years ago, I said, screw it. I'm trying my own thing, both professionally. I started a consulting firm. And then when I started doing that, I just like shed the cloak of tentativeness, if that didn't sound awkward, I don't know what I
oh my God, have you heard the episode
I didn't yell suck my labes.
Think about what we've already discussed
fair enough.
This episode.
Tough to follow suck my labes, though. It's too shocking.
My bad, sorry, I whooped that out too soon.
That's good. That's kind of the thing that I was always set in, and that's what I, relatively recently try to overcome, and I still struggle with it, but obviously, you know, you've seen me do stand-up a couple times. That's not something for the tentative. I mean,
yeah.
And doing it more than once. When I started doing comedy, my goal was to do it one time. Just one time be on the working side of the microphone.
Yeah.
And I did 5 o'clock Lounge on Ryan DePerna's birthday. He and Joe Whalen were running the show. They were both so fucking high, they couldn't see straight. I had no idea what to do. I sat in the very front, so obviously lesson number one.
Sure.
I was supposed to do 10 minutes. I didn't know that because they didn't tell me that. So I did 3. Oh. And this all comes full circle because I did Jess's show, the Avenue Tap House, on Sunday night a couple weeks ago.
He does it regularly if you ever want to check him out.
And I was supposed to give her 10 minutes, and I only gave her 7. And so I went 7 minutes, the next guy went 8. And Jess gets up and goes, if one of these men could give me the 10 minutes I'm asking for, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's the standard joke. And I make it every week and I feel like a hack after a while. But like, because there's a new audience every week.
It works every
just
week.
Like, if I could just get one guy to last longer than 10 minutes. Jesus Christ.
And then the next one up was a woman. I forget who it was. It may have been, I don't remember who it was. Anyway, she went like 8 minutes and Jess replies, no one cares when a woman finishes early.
Yeah, Anya. I think that's probably Anya. Yeah, and that's true. It's all true.
It's funny because it's true.
I love comedy. To me, has always seemed like bizarro world because women and minorities do way better, I think, in comedy. I'm sure there are exceptions and all that kind of thing. But like any white dude that goes on stage, everyone's like, arms folded, sits back
everyone's
in their chair.
Like, whoa there. Why don't you take a step back?
Yeah.
You're offending all of us.
You
and then a woman comes up, it's like, suck my lips. And they're like, brilliant.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what, though? I've learned that the hardest group to be, the hardest, gender or racial group to be in as a comic is whatever you are. Every comic's like, oh, it's so tough for a white guy. Oh, nobody wants women. Oh, black guys get shut out. I'm like, everyone, whatever group you're in, that's the toughest group to be in. It's just, and it goes from my level up to Dave Chappelle. I mean, every comic thinks that they're the ones overcoming.
Oppressed.
Right.
Yeah.
And the truth is, they're probably all right to some degree. So
I don't know why I'm just like, I tried to come up with a premise for the show, like your default settings, and like 75% of every show just ends up being, here's what's going on in Cleveland comedy. Like, I just feel like it's just
sorry.
So like, no, it's not your fault. I do this. I'm like, what? And then I have friends who are like not interested in comedy and they're like, it'd be good if you didn't fucking talk about inside baseball, Cleveland comedy the whole time. So we're going to try to steer back and then we'll get away and that's fine, but we'll steer back. Okay. So what I usually do is try to determine like sort of your initial, like if you can recall some of the first few instances where you had difficulties with making decisions or difficulties with establishing yourself, however you would technically consider tentativeness.
You know, I think I was, I mean, it goes probably, this could get, I should be on a couch if we're really going to do this right. No, as a kid, I mean, it's kind of, again, weird knowing what I look like now. I started high school at under 5 feet tall, under 100 pounds, complete nerd. And I had hair. Now I'm a big, bald, meathead-looking guy. So my self-image is still the scrawny nerd that got picked on. And yet I also know what I look like walking down the street.
You look like a bulldog. I would not fuck with you.
Bill Squire's nickname for me is Cold Stone Steve Austin. Steve Austin, he's doing, yes, takes a second.
That one took a second.
He crushed me with that one. It was great. And then he stuck with it. He's like, that one works. I'm not changing that up. But yeah, I mean, I got the big dome and whatever, and yet in my mind, I'm the scrawny nerd who was afraid to ask to play with the other kids in the dinosaur thing when I was in elementary school. And you know, I got a little bit bigger coming through high school and I had a little bit of an angry streak for a while there. But you know, then I was raised in a play it safe kind of mentality in the house. My dad was a guy who grew up in a steel town. He was a college professor in large part because they get tenured. So get tenured, you don't need to worry about getting fired. And he watched a steel town just crumble around him as, you know, as a young guy.
What was the town? I'm sorry.
What's that?
What was the town you grew up in?
I grew up in Buffalo, New York.
Oh, okay.
So Buffalo and Cleveland are really similar towns. And it's funny to me because like people will talk shit. I've been to Buffalo. It's a shithole. And I'm like, it is so close to where we are right now. And I love both cities. I absolutely love Cleveland. I love Buffalo. And I've lived all over the place.
Like comparing rotten apples to disintegrating oranges.
But here's the thing. I've lived in Orlando, Florida. Orlando sucks.
I've heard that. Yeah.
It's a horrible place.
It's in the center, too. It's not even near the ocean.
It's not even near the ocean. Yeah. It's a shithole with either it's really old people,
families,
gangs. I mean, I used to – my drive to work was like 7 miles. And I would go past this one intersection – well, on my drive to work during the year I lived there, there were like 6 or 7 fast food places that were robbed at gunpoint during my year there.
Awesome.
And I was, I watched a prostitute get propositioned in the car right in front of me, which sucked because I was next in line.
Were you like, when she came to your window, were you really tentative about what you were going to say?
Honestly, I probably would have been. Honestly, it happened right in front of me. I watched this woman walk up to a car, start like tap on the guy's window, talk for a minute, get in. And I'm like, it's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday. And I just watched that go down. So maybe I should.
Discounted rates.
Right.
Though,
probably. Yeah. Probably.
Red light specials.
So anyway, Orlando sucks. I lived in Raleigh, North Carolina. It was okay. You know, I've lived in Cincinnati, Indianapolis.
Boston. How do you feel about Detroit?
Only been through Detroit. Never lived there.
I can't stand Detroit.
Okay. Oh, really? That is
controversial
scandalous.
Opinion.
Holy shit. So scandalous. No, wait. If you understood Gigi, this is actually very shocking. Yeah.
I just don't like it at all. I've tried a couple times.
Now, did you live there or just travel through it?
Just gone for like a long weekend.
And how recently? Because I've heard it's gotten better in the last couple years. You were there Tuesday. Okay.
Last year.
Okay.
This past year, okay. I went for a concert. And so I was there for like a long weekend, Airbnb at... I want to say like a Crazy Mermaid Lady's house.
Okay.
It was.
Well, that's not Detroit's fault.
No, that had, no. But she chose Detroit.
Okay.
So does that speak volumes? I don't know.
Possibly.
But yeah, I just really hated it. And their like main strip. I don't know. My friend kept saying, oh, well, this is kind of like their 4th Street where all the restaurants and bars are. They're kind of place to hang out. It's by like a casino. I was
so
like,
what is happening?
So was East 4th
Street.
No, but it was not. It was so gross. And so, just their patio, I'm like, I don't even want to touch anything right
now. I feel like the stories of Detroit's like renaissance or whatever the fuck have been greatly exaggerated. Because that's the thing I keep hearing. Is like,
I know.
No, Detroit's back and Detroit's great
this,
and it's
like,
better
redemptive
than Cleveland.
Video about Detroit's art scene mm-hmm. and their culture and their architecture. And I just was like, wait, no. Where? Am I in the right part? I just didn't understand.
Maybe
it.
It's just a very like isolated clump.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know.
Hipsterdom.
You know, my podcast, Whiskey Congress, snuck that in.
Oh, we'll talk about it later.
So my co-host went to Detroit
talk
recently.
Talk about it as much
about
as you fucking want, but we'll definitely bump it at the end.
Okay,
too.
Cool. Anyway,
I know so
Detroit,
many people who
he
love
went
it.
To Detroit and said, boy, Cleveland needs to catch up to Detroit. So I'm kind of here.
I'm shocked by that. I don't know.
He's a Youngstown guy who lives in Cleveland. So it's not like he's coming from...
I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
L.A., which, by the
just
way, LA, L.A. also sucks, by the way.
L.A. was is intense.
L.A. is horrible.
I didn't live there, but I worked in Southern California for about 2 years, and it was awful.
I mean, love Southern California. I don't like L.A.
San Diego's amazing.
Ah, yeah.
I want to go to San Diego so badly.
So I lived in Laguna Beach when I was down there. I'm wearing a Laguna Beach shirt. What a hack move that is.
So bougie.
It is. Very bougie. And... But anyway, Laguna Beach was amazing, but it never felt like I could live here. I mean, it was
Did you just constantly feel like you were on vacation?
Pretty much. I was working in Irvine, and I would stay in Laguna, and every once in a while, I'd be like, walking down the street to get a coffee, and I wasn't amazed by what was around me, and I'd like slap myself and say, do not get used to this. This is not your sustainable life. As soon as your client stops paying for the hotel, this is not you anymore. But for those 2 years, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And then I would go to LA for the weekend every now and then. I'm thinking, this place sucks. And maybe
it is really weird, disappointing.
If you were fabulously wealthy and didn't have to deal with traffic and
just lived up in the mountains
and just want to live by yourself, it's probably great. But I'm not, and it wasn't. But right. San Diego was like someone dropped Chicago next to the Pacific Ocean. I mean,
yeah.
The people
oh, wow.
were nice, beautiful city. I mean, that was the only place I went to, and I said, all right. I could do this.
My dad lived there for a while in his early 20s, and he still talks about it, like raves about it. He loved it.
I wanted to live there for forever, and if they would just fucking either make like some kind of like speed train that goes between San Diego and L.A., like I would move to L.A. in a minute, or I'd move to San Diego in a minute so I could work in L.A. to do like my comedy shit, you know what I mean? But like L.A. is just so...
Housing is so expensive
there.
Everything's so expensive.
That's the one thing that, you know, if... You're familiar with a Hyperloop? It's the Elon Musk fast transit thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If that ever happened, if it ever got to the point where it didn't matter where you lived and you could work essentially, you know, live in Cleveland, you could work anywhere between Detroit, Chicago,
that
New York,
be
whatever.
That would insane.
It would change the world.
Right.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it would make Cleveland suddenly like a valuable place to be. I mean,
right.
There would be no
Chicago,
housing
New
here
York.
Anymore. It would
be
full.
It would change. I don't know.
We couldn't park.
It would be like
anywhere.
Japan.
Don't
and we'd all be living
happen.
In micro apartments.
I need parking
apartments.
Spaces and cheap rent. Stop doing this.
Yeah, right.
Stop making
it
happen. All right. So you grew up in Buffalo.
Yes.
And your dad was a very play it safe kind of person.
Very much.
Okay.
Very much.
And how about your mom?
I'm from a weird family because half my family is extremely conservative Catholic and my parents were both – much more liberal, but my mom was still fairly Catholic. Mm-hmm. And my dad was an early adapter to the whole organized religion is bullshit thing. Okay. And so I grew up very Catholic. And it's still a huge influence on my life. I didn't stop going to Mass until like a year ago.
So even though your dad was fallen, you still kept with it?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Big time. Big time.
Very cool.
Fallen is not the word I would.
Well, but that's, I mean, that's how the Catholics refer to it. Like when someone's in the Catholic Church and then they're like, fuck religion, you're like, he's fallen.
You know what? But he wouldn't say that. Like, he didn't want to make a point. He just wanted to be left the fuck alone.
Okay.
And he thought that organized religion caused more problems than it fixed.
Sure.
And you can certainly make a case for that. There's been one or two things in history that have gone
absolutely
badly because of that. But I mean, I had the Catholic thing. I was an altar boy. I was never molested. That's your next question.
Well,
probably hurt my self-esteem.
Because
it's
not 1999, so okay. That's not in the forefront.
Okay, sorry.
No, I'm just being an asshole.
But anyway, it was a blow to my self-esteem. I'm like, what? Right here. No, that's not cool at all.
No, no, you're fine. So you're, okay. So do you think that your tentativeness came from the play it safe-ness of your dad? And
absolutely.
Was your mom pretty much the same way? Was she like?
No, she kind of stayed. It was very, I was much more influenced by my dad. My mom was mostly a homemaker. I mean, she worked at Joann Fabrics
so
for a couple years.
So she didn't take a lot of risks either.
Right. Okay. No, I guess not. I mean, they did the influence of that lifestyle, of the old school lifestyle in a city like Buffalo, you know, where, you know, oddly, we moved away from Buffalo when I was really young and then moved back by the time I was six.
Mm-hmm.
So we, for all intents and purposes, we never left. But, you know, the influence of you live with your parents until you get married and all mm-hmm. that shit, that was not rare. I keep in mind, I'm 46 years old.
Yeah.
So the changes in mentality over.
I thought you were 40. And I was like, I was kidding with Jim before
you.
We came in. I was like, you're our first older man guest because I thought he was 40.
And I'm way older than you thought
I was. Yeah, I didn't even think that. Yeah, I was just kidding.
Well, thank you, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the funny thing is I hang out with these comics and like by comic standards, I am ancient. By comics who are doing the, you know.
Yeah. Cindy and I
ancient.
Talked about this last week too.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
she's roughly my age. So anyway, yeah, I was definitely, I didn't want to disappoint my dad. It was a big part
okay.
of it. And you know, the whole play it safe mentality was, you know, never get too high and you won't get too low. And I lived that. That was ingrained into my head for like I said, all of my young life. And then when I finally said, fuck this, I'm going to try my own thing. He thought I was crazy. He passed away.
When was that?
2011. End of 2011.
So,
I said, I'm going to start a consulting firm.
Okay.
I'm going to take a chance. And it was a really amazing thing for me. This is way too weird. Sorry, but
no, nothing's weird.
Basically,
on here.
Fair
literally
enough. I didn't say suck my
labes.
So
yeah.
There, basically I decided I was going to go off on my own. I started an LLC for a, you know, consulting firm. And I got offered a contract and I literally woke up one day and said to I said, look, you have a contract in your hand. If you're not going to do it now, all you can do is look in a mirror and say, fuck you. You have no balls. You'll never do this. Go to work for someone else for the rest of your life or do this one or the other. I made the decision right there and I was gung ho. And it was right around the holidays. And I told everyone in Buffalo at the holidays, I'm going to do this. And everyone was telling me good luck. And I felt so great. And I had all the confidence in the world. And then I got in the cab to drive to the airport to fly to LA, and it just came on like a tidal wave. I'm like, holy fuck, I have no safety net at all.
That's
this
so scary.
I had a 6-month contract in hand, but in consulting, 6 months can be 6 hours.
Yeah.
You show up and piss off your client, you're gone. It ended up being 8 months, and it ended up being a great thing. And like I said, I hung out in
That's
Southern California.
That's badass, though.
It
I
was,
wouldn't be that ballsy to pull that
it was,
shit.
And again, I got my dad telling me, you know, you have a stable job. Why would you do this? And I just one day said, fuck it, I'm going to try. So,
okay, now I'm inspired because that's the thing I've been pushing. Like,
yeah.
Because I don't know if you've ever had this, Jeej, but like I have these moments as a comic where it's like, should I just say, fuck it, if I can't find a new job in LA and just go and live off of like my 401k? And like, is that a thing that people do? And can you get away with that?
You know what? You know a couple people. Maybe you don't know some of the folks that have gone to LA.
I do. I mean, I know Ramon and I know Yusef.
Okay, those
I know
are the
those
two
guys.
That I would point
to.
I mean,
yeah.
The thing that I would say about that, if I may be a guidance counselor or whatever. if you try it and it doesn't work, you can come back.
Yeah.
It's not like it's not like you get one shot and if you fail, they, you know, the Spartans throw
you
in the pit with the rest of the
world. Not miss your chance to grow. The opportunity comes once in a lifetime.
The suburb I grew up in outside of Buffalo was West Seneca, and I used to tell people I rap battled my way out of West Seneca. It was not taken seriously.
What about you, Jeet? Have you ever had that moment where you just thought about, like...
I mean, I definitely have... I have, like, moments of these, like, urges to just... I don't know.
But is it
just
ever, like,
go and try something new?
Realistic? Or is it just, like, a fantasy? Like, have you actually...
But that, yeah, that's the thing. I think at the core of it, it never was really based on reality or, like, skills that I have yet. It's more of, you need to start from scratch and start doing this thing, like... I love film, and I would love nothing more than to produce films.
Yeah.
But I have no technical experience doing that. So in order for me to just do something like that, I would have to just backtrack by 100 steps mm-hmm. and put myself in like a very low place compared just as far as in my mind goes.
Did you go to college?
Yeah.
Jim? Yeah. You went to college. Where did you go to?
I went to West Virginia University.
Oh, wow. Okay. Did you study something specific?
Or? I'm a chemical engineer.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
I say no shit too much on this podcast, I realize. So.
Yeah, me and Bob Kinner are two chemical engineers in the Cleveland comedy scene. God,
this explains so much now. Well, it's interesting. There's a whole theory that, like, some of the best comics are, like, brilliant people. And some of, like,
and then
comics,
there's me.
Well, and some of the comics, like. Like, Bob's an alt comic. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen Bob perform, GH. Like, he's... Mm.
Sorry to keep dropping comedy names on this.
No, I would describe him as an alt comic because he just does, like, really... He screams on stage. he rips off his shirt and he's, like, ripped.
He's jacked,
like,
yeah.
He has, like, an 8-pack and is just, like... GH is like, no, I do.
I don't remember that. I've seen some crazy always, people up on that stage.
He doesn't always do that, but he does a voice for some of his jokes and it's very intense.
He sounds like Bob Cat Goldthwait when he yells and, like... And that's the thing. Like, some of the more quirky, interesting alt comics are, like, some of the most brilliant...
Bob and I did the Funny Stop together. We had done LVT a bunch of times. And sorry for dropping
back.
No, this
is fine. Stop.
So anyway, we're at the Funny Stop, and we just got the speech from Pete, the owner of the Funny Stop, who said, I want 5 clean fucking minutes out of you. And in my mind, I'm like,
oh, I know
so
him.
You have no idea what irony is if you want 5 clean fucking minutes. So
five
Bob and I are
labby
like,
minutes.
Right. So Bob and I are talking, and we, you know, never really spoken. And finally he's like, you know, hey man, what's up? We talked, and he went to Kent, I think, and he's a chemical engineer. I'm like, I'm a chemical engineer too. And then he was on Glenn and Dean's show. I don't know if you've ever, okay, Glenn and Dean Zarba, Glenn Longwell, Dean Zarba have a show. Bob was on there and they called him the smartest guy in Cleveland comedy. And we're like, well, fuck that. I want to brain off with Kinner right now.
Brain off.
Don't call it a comeback.
He might be the smartest dude, but like, there's a difference between smart comics and smart people. I'm not saying Bob isn't both, but like,
yeah, well,
I call into question the hyperbole.
No, just
there.
We're both chemical engineers. I got podcast jealous.
So was your goal to be, what was your goal with that degree to become?
You know, well, find a job in corporate America. And actually, all right, here's the truth. My dad wanted me to go to grad school, get a PhD like him and become a college professor.
Okay.
And I went to grad school at Ohio State because I wanted to make my dad happy. And that was maybe the most, I won't say it was the worst decision I ever made, but I loved being at Ohio State. But I think because I had lived at home in college, I didn't have that like freedom feeling until I got to grad school, which is not the best time to get that freedom feeling.
Right.
So I'm like living undergraduate lifestyle, but I'm in you know, a PhD program in pharmaceutical chemistry. And those two things did not go well together. And I mean, I did okay, but I just hated it. I hated what I was doing. Here's a funny thing. I hated my advisor. My advisor was a woman who I won't say her name because given the current...
name was Maud.
Fairly close. She was just an awful, awful human being.
Yeah.
And I could tell a bunch of stories, but for the purpose of time, given all of the, you know, workplace inappropriate stories that are coming out, my advisor, a woman from Taiwan, once was, we had like a forced happy hour every Friday in the lab, so they would have to kind of go there and drink Pepsi and eat chips and like be social because her husband, who was her bitch, had no life and she had no life and she wanted us to get sucked into that.
She's like, hang out with me.
Yes, exactly. And her kids would come there and anyway.
Oh.
The lab was like 25 people. Well, she was talking about a visiting professor who had given us a talk and said that he went to West Virginia and not a lot of smart people come out of WVU, right with me standing there. And I said, you know, some guys do okay out of there. Their chemie program's pretty strong. And she goes, you're not here for your brains. You're here for your smile, your legs, and your entertaining hairstyles.
She said that to you?
Yes, in front of the whole lab. What?
If you guys could say Jim Locke right now, you would not agree that most of, two-thirds of those things would probably not
well,
work your hair for
well,
Jim
Locke.
Well,
at the time I had a shaved head.
No, I get that. It's just hilarious to me that one of the things was hairstyles.
Yeah, she said that to me in front of the whole lab, and I thought, you know, that's 1995 or six, and I'm thinking...
That's bizarre.
And she's just an asshole of a person. It just, I mean, I was not, my academic career was not hurt by that.
Shut up and look good, sir.
Right, exactly.
Don't regale us with your intelligence.
I'm here for my looks, which you would
piece
also.
Piece of meat.
Yes. Anyway, so when people say, you don't know what it's like, actually I do, because that was said to me in front of our entire lab. Now, she was an awful human being for lots of other reasons.
Oh, yeah, it's not like that can't happen to guys.
She treated so many people so badly. But that, I don't...
Did you tell her, stop being so labby?
I should have said, suck my labes. But back then, I was tentative, see? Now, I would have said it.
Okay, right. So do you tie relevance from tentativeness to also, like, introversion or, like, shyness at all?
You know, I don't think I would call myself shy, even... Once I got to college, I kind of got away from the high school thing where I was the nerdy kid that got picked on a lot. And once I got to college, I kind of got a fresh start because no one in West Virginia knew a thing about me. And by then I had kind of late bloomed I never really, even to this day, but especially then, I had my self-image and I had a hard time getting over the fact that, you know, that's not what you project walking down the street. So stop. And I didn't really stop until 2011 when I said, fuck it, I'm doing this.
All right, so what was the pivotal thing that happened in 2011?
The company I worked for was such a train wreck that I realized this place is going to get shut down by the FDA. And a friend of mine who, he became a friend. He was a big shot consultant in pharmaceutical manufacturing. And I met him in 1999. I was this young kid who had just followed his then fiance down to Orlando, Florida. Which might have something to do with, she became my ex-fiance fairly quickly.
My boyfriend has a very similar story, and it was also Florida. And okay. I think he left Ohio because he was in love with a girl and moved to Florida.
I followed her from Columbus to Florida.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And then she followed me back to Columbus, and then it didn't end well.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And then I left for Boston. And Boston, anyway.
God damn, what cities have you not lived
in,
Jim Locke?
I've been around, girl. Jesus. I have been around.
All right. So you realized it was getting shut down by the FDA?
Yeah,
is that what you said?
And so this guy, my buddy Ken, who, like I said, a huge big shot consultant, said to me once, you have the ability to do this, and this place is going down. He goes, I'm not talking to you as a consultant. I'm talking to you as your friend. You know, so I kind of skipped the story. Sorry. I met him in 1999 as a relatively young engineer, and he scared the shit out of me. He was at this place in Orlando, and the manager of microbiology down there didn't like me, and I didn't like her very much. And she was presenting something I had done for their lab to this guy who's, like I said, a big shot, $350 an hour. You put his name on something and the FDA says thumbs up. And he taps on the glass, waves me over, and I thought she had sabotaged me. And I'm ready to just go down. So the tentative nerdy kid has a side that when I get bullied too far, I just want to swing until I'm dead.
Okay.
And when that happens, it doesn't happen often, but when that switch goes, it gets ugly fast.
That's me. I totally relate to that.
And so I'm like, this is going to go bad. This guy's a big shot. I'm going down, and I'm going down on my shield. Fuck this. And he looks at me and says, this is really good work. And I went from, let's go, motherfucker, to, thank you, sir. But anyway, I reconnect with that guy years later in Cleveland. We become friends and, you know, trade stories about when we knew each other back in the day. And he kind of gave me the, you know, word of encouragement and said, you can do this. And not only can you do this, off the record between you and me, you should, because this place ain't going to be around long. And so then I decided to look into forming an LLC, and I found it, and I reached out for a potential contract. It landed, and back to where I got.
Do you think that moment that you had with this guy, like, I mean, it almost kind of seems symbolic in a way that you were like, I'm going to fucking destroy this man. And then this is also the guy who was like, that kind of like flipped everything on its head.
You know, I didn't expect to destroy him. I expected to lose
in
a horrible fashion.
But in your mind, like at that moment, you're like, I'm going to like pull out your insides.
Right. I'm dropping the gloves and fighting the baddest dude in hockey.
Right.
I'm going to get pulverized,
right.
But fuck it. You know, I never really thought of it that way until now. Yeah, but he's, I mean, he's, he's a guy I reach out to fairly regularly.
So you guys are still in touch?
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. I talk to him. At Christmas time, I actually gave him a call because I wasn't sure if he had family around for Christmas, and we talked for about an hour, and then he told me, if you got $4,000 in your pocket and you want to come fly fishing in Brazil next year, and I'm like, yeah, I don't. So
see you there.
Yeah, right.
I wish I knew Portuguese. They're like, hasta luego. I don't know. They have more O's in Portuguese. Sao.
Yeah, I definitely cannot speak that language.
Brazil nuts. I don't know. I'm just like thinking of Brazilian things.
They just call
things.
Them nuts, by the way.
I would have just been like, "Ay." And that's it. And then ran away from that conversation.
Anyway, yeah.
That sounds amazing, actually.
It would be. His guy is a super passionate fly fisherman. So come to think of it, you're supposed to send me pictures of his last trip down there.
Are you considering it? Or
not realistically.
Oh, there's the tentativeness.
Yeah, okay. You're right. I'm not. You know what? That is kind of true, though, because people say, oh, we should do this. And I'm always like, yeah, that's a great idea. But I'm terrible about making plans and, you know, taking that trip or doing whatever. I only went out on spring break once when I was in college, and it was literally a last-minute decision. Now this is – I really should be on a couch. Holy fuck, this is really deep.
Move over, Brutus.
Yeah.
Brutus is, like, licking his butt right now. It's a cat, by the way.
It's a cat, not a guy. No, but really, I mean, I only went to spring break once. And
it's more than I went, if that makes you feel better.
Well, yeah. it was literally – two of my friends said, hey, one of our buddies backed out. It'll be $300. You should go. I really can't. I'm like, that's no excuse. And they literally, like, you know – I kept making excuses, and they kept telling me that excuse doesn't work. And finally, I like called home and said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And I don't remember if it was my mom or dad said, you should go. So we went to Panama City Beach, which is a classy place.
Oh, yeah. I went there for spring break.
Okay. many stories. It was actually kind of funny because that year there was a huge snowstorm that hit the Southeast. So we got caught in a snowstorm in Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And well, we made it down, and it actually snowed in Panama City Beach the night we got there. But then the next day it got to 85 degrees, and everyone went out to get into the sun, and everyone got burnt to a crisp because we were all stupid because we were pissed. We were stuck in the cold in Florida. But it ended up being really interesting. But yeah, I mean, that's another
– see, that's a great story, though. But
tentative is definitely the
– so I think that, like, I mean, it's – it's kind of like fly by the seat of your pants.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's like you're living on the edge. Yeah. You're just like, what am I gonna do? What am I gonna do? I'm doing it. I'm all of a sudden, you're just like shock everyone.
In the 40 some years of my life, we're talking about like the three times I actually went for it, though. So I mean,
that's not the worst thing, though. Like, and that's the thing. Like, I think a lot of people talk about their default setting as if it's like a ghost or a skeleton or something. But it's like, no, this is just like fucking who you are, and it's always been you. And sometimes it becomes less you as you get older, but there's still those pieces and parts that are there. And that's what I find fascinating, is that like people change a lot, but there's also a lot of shit that doesn't change. So.
Yeah, no, I'm having some cathartic moments.
Get it all out.
You don't even have to make a copay. Right. Like, you didn't have to get a referral. Like, yeah, and your therapists are cute and give you alcohol. And
that's why I've avoided therapy my whole life, is there's no alcohol.
For this exact moment.
I thought someday two cute girls will give me alcohol and do this for free.
Someday therapy would be worth it. Right now, it's not.
And share it with thousands of people. So, yeah.
So you grew up kind of. Would you say as you get older, you become less tentative? Has there been like a
absolutely.
Spectrum? Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
So and you think that the most sort of iconic moment was when you decided to start up your own consulting business, where you really kind of transitioned out of completely tentative into
absolutely.
Less tentative.
Yes.
Do you have like self-reflection moments where you hear yourself being tentative, or do you just anymore? Is it more just kind of like you have a fuck it attitude where you just kind of adventure out more?
I'm definitely more adventurous I've gotten more and more adventurous. Like I said, the moment in the cab on my way to the airport, I almost panicked. I mean, I was just
for
like,
spring break?
No. Flying to LA
to
start my consulting.
Yeah,
it was
LA,
like,
yeah.
It's
oh,
like,
man.
Oh my gosh. I literally like tomorrow could have, because when you work in the corporate world, which I did for over 15 years, you know, you've got your health insurance, you got your paid vacation days, you got all this, and it becomes easy just to be a, you know, cog in the machine, so to speak. And that's what I strived to be. I got there. So why not be that guy for the, you know, rest of your life until you retire and
or dead
or die. I mean, yeah. And then, once I made that move and it worked out for me, and then, you know, things went really well for me in my first 2 years of consulting, I definitely got more and more bold. And I will say this, I have way more regrets of what I didn't do than what I did.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. So I don't know if that's normal or not.
No, I actually read a study about it. It was saying, like, not just that generic statement, but, like, they were, like, citing specific instances. Like, people who didn't have kids are more regretful for not having kids than the ones who had kids, which I don't have kids. I don't think any of us have
kids. I do not have kids.
That we're aware of. And so, I mean, like, but the thing is, like, that is the thing they find most often is people are far more regretful of things they didn't do than stuff
they did.
Yeah,
I can see that.
You know, though, I was engaged to a girl who wanted to do the let's get a, you know, house in the suburbs, have 2.5 kids and all that shit. And I was totally on board with it. I was totally in love with her at the time. And I do think back to that and say, if I did that, I would probably be miserable.
Yep.
And, you know, not to get too deep, but I don't know. Like, my last girlfriend broke up with me because she said you know, I want to have kids. Are we doing this or not?
Sure.
And I said no.
Right.
And she said, we have to break up. And then we had like a 6-month, let's pretend we didn't have that conversation.
Right. Oh, everyone does that. Everyone does.
And then finally, she was like in or out. And I said, can't do it.
Yeah.
But at 46, I don't want to start.
Yeah.
And at 46, this is maybe old guy talking, but I look at the world today. I'm like, fuck, I do not want to have a kid in this world that I'm responsible
scary.
For
right now,
especially knowing family history and my health choices, I'm going to be dead in 20 years. I mean, if I have a kid now, congratulations on graduation, thump.
Yeah.
I regretted it for a while. And finally I said, you know what? No, because we're living in the, have you seen Idiocracy?
Everyone always cites that. I've never seen it.
I'm sure if there's any
comics listening to this right now, their heads are probably exploding.
If you watch it for the first time in today's world, your head will explode.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk the plot line, but basically 500 years in the future, society has gotten so dumb and two people from 1990 get transported into the future and they're now the smartest people on the planet.
I need to see this.
And the president of the United States is President Camacho, played by Terry Crews.
Nice.
And he's shirtless riding the presidential Harley. Yeah. Dude, so ridiculously jacked. It's ridiculous.
So
he's hilarious, too. And he's a president because he's a former WWF champion. And so now he got voted in for being, and our current president happens to be in the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. So the only thing wrong with that movie is it's 500 years too early.
Oh, so all the stuff that's happening 500 years from now is actually happening now,
It's not quite that bad, but you'll look at this going, fuck, this is way more realistic.
That's the thing. I keep hearing people say it. Like, all my dude friends are like, Idiocracy in like the last 18 months. And I'm like, I should probably watch that. But
yeah, I want to watch it.
But it's worth a watch, but it becomes almost prophetic.
But like you were going back to, you know, I feel like having kids is such a deal breaker with relationships.
And that's
thinking
fair.
About the decision to have children now is so much different than it was even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Deciding to have kids now, I mean, that's like a scary idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least in my mind, that's like, wow, okay, we don't know how things are gonna go, let's do this. It's much more of a risk factor.
I'm a huge environmental, you know, nut. I have a rainwater collection thing in my backyard and raised bed gardens and
nice
and stuff. I'm really into, you know, conservationism and all that stuff, and I have just weird peeves about people wasting things and how wasteful we are. And that's also part of Idiocracy, is like all the garbage for the last 500 years has been building up in a pile. And there's an avalanche of garbage. but, you know, I do have legitimate fears of where we're going to be as a world and as a country in 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
And to be Mr. Negative, but
no,
I'm concerned.
But I think every generation has had that, though. Like,
oh, definitely.
That's probably
it's
true.
Like, it can't get any worse than this
10
years later.
Well, I always think of, like, so
they had it so good.
Right.
I watched Mad Men, and, like, it was episode where, like, the Bay of Pigs was about to happen, and they all thought the world was going to end.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, it's funny looking 40, 50 years on, like, haha, they thought the world was going to end.
Oh, how cute.
Like, oh, wait, we all think the world's going to end, like, every single day.
I mean, when I was a kid, there was a made-for-TV movie called The Morning After about what happens the day after a U.S. versus Soviet Union nuclear war. And it was like the most talked-about thing, and everyone watched it with their parents. It was absolutely terrifying. It was a 2-day or 3-day miniseries. Because back then, literally, your biggest fear for the end of the world was, we shoot a bunch of nukes at the Soviets shoot a bunch of nukes back. And now, now maybe some crazy guy in North Korea is going to blow up L.A., but we've already talked about how L.A. sucks, so.
Fuck those people.
Yeah.
Fuck you
and your perfect weather.
Yeah, and your perfect teeth.
No more celebrity cast system.
Perfect boobs and perfect right. everything. That's what you get. That's what you get.
When I was down there, I used to joke that the cliche of the woman overly done up in her workout clothes carrying the dog in her arms with a leash on it was real. Like, I saw them cross each other at a crosswalk, and I tried to take a picture of them because I thought it was so hilarious, but I didn't want to get caught taking a picture of them because who knows who they were.
Oh, right.
But that cliches exist for a reason. But yeah, anyway, yeah, so you're right. I mean, maybe I'm just being overly negative and old guy.
I will say, though, you have a very definitive stance, which contradicts the overall tentativeness. Which I will credit you.
Well, but it's a tentative stance, isn't it? I mean, it's like, I don't want to do this because I'm afraid of what's going to happen.
No, it's never. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're saying never. You're not saying, like, maybe I will, maybe okay, I won't. Yeah. I don't know. That's my take.
Yeah, but I fell off that cliff fairly recently. It's been the last 3 or 4 years when I finally...
Because if I'm being honest, I'm the maybe I will, maybe I won't, because I still have, like, a good 4 years of, like, breeding possibilities.
Good breeding years.
Right. So, and I've always kind of been that person because, like, as much as I bitch about, like, children are stupid and expensive and take everything that you love away from you, like, I actually wouldn't be sad if, like, it ended up happening. But I'm also the kind of person that's not going to be, when I'm, like, 39, going through, like, IVF or looking for, like, adoption and all that kind of stuff. It's like, I'm very much, if it happens, it happens. So I think that it's interesting that you have taken a very definitive stance with, you know,
again, it's been a fairly recent thing, but yeah. I just do the math on it. The math gets depressing.
Yeah.
Like, well, 46 years old. So
this is what
at
Cindy
64,
and
my kids are graduating high school. Really?
Yep. That's what Cindy and I talked about last week, because she was saying she had her daughter fairly young. And I was telling her that I have high school friends that have had, they had kids in high school. So meaning I have high school friends that are now seeing their kids off to college.
Oh, yeah.
And they're empty nesters. And they're 36. And I was like, I know that's probably not the best scenario, but also they're my age and they're done. Like, they have their kids and now they can live their lives. And there's this part of me that's just kind of like, if I have kids now, I'll be 612 when I see my grandkids. So, like, I kind of regret that aspect of it, I guess. So I totally get what you're saying about the whole age thing.
And, and my ex was, 12 years younger than me. And so she's, you know, it's reasonable for her to say, if this is what I want and you're saying no,
you're
I'm not sticking around.
Yeah, you're both totally different phases.
Right,
it's like,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, ladies, we always go after the older guys.
And
but
keep
really...
doing it, please. Please. And 20 and 30-year-old dudes, stick with the video games. Stop trying to interact with these women. Just play video. What you do. I love that so much. If it wasn't for dudes getting addicted to video games, I would never get laid.
My friend was talking about one of the dating apps that she's on. And I'm like, well, you know, she's like, I just can't find a normal guy on these.
I'm not claiming to be normal, but I play video games.
And I said, well, what's your age range that you have? And keep in mind, she's in her mid-20s. She said, oh, it's, you know, like 25 through 30. And I'm going, but really? Why? Like, why is it so low? And she's like looking at me like, older than 30? Like, yeah, what is your problem? I don't know. I just, even just from interacting with guys in their 20s, it's just such a different experience.
Yeah. I think you're right.
I mean, I think that there is some truth. I'm not claiming like, oh, women are better.
No.
This isn't one of those podcasts. No. But I really do think that men mature like slightly behind women.
Oh, yeah.
So it's if you're dating behind, you can't be shocked when they're like, oh, well,
I've heard so many from female friends of mine. I've heard so many times the same story. It's like, well, I was hoping he would come to bed with me and have sex, but he was playing video games online and just like, thank you for existing. Because
you just high-fived him.
Yeah, I'm just mentally like, I used to do that as a stand-up, like, I love 25 to 35-year-old men. Wait a minute, that's coming out wrong. But, and then I do the whole, thank you for playing video games more than having sex.
One thing I will say is that, Jim mentioned, we've known each other about a year. In the last, I would probably say 3 to 4 months, I've seen a lot more of you. Now, I know you were traveling for work, so that was probably a lot of it. But I just, like, to the degree of, like, you being, taking more risks, being more, you've been more active in the comedy community than I've seen you in a while. See, this is just what I do. Just like mid-sentence belch right in, and I'm like, I don't have any manners. I'm sorry. I'm a boy.
No problem.
I'm a boy with leaves.
Okay. Anyway, yes. So, yeah, no, you've definitely seen more. You've seen, I mean, I agree. We've had a couple nights like after comedy shows where we sat around having drinks, talked, and I think become pretty good friends. But yeah, I mean, for the first however many months, yeah, I saw that girl, Jess Falstick. She's pretty funny. Falstick, sorry.
No, it's fine. I don't mind. It's not my name. I just took it from my husband. So you guys can butcher it however you want.
Okay, yeah, then never mind. So anyway, yeah, so I thought you were funny and we you know, say hi and do the whole, you know, post comedy show round table, which I love that so much.
Me too.
I love that. I mean, for me, that's really why I still do it. I mean, I don't have any expectations of making it as a comic starting when I did. Mm-hmm. I just love being around the scene,
the camaraderie.
Around the camaraderie, and it's just a good time. And there's a couple people that are clicky and whatever, but I'm kind of, there's a few people in the comedy scene that don't particularly like me, but for the most part, I'm so non-threatening because people look at me and say, this guy's a showcase guy, an open mic guy. He's not trying to take my spot.
I have found it impossible for you to make a mark in the comedy community, to like have people notice you and simultaneously have them all like you. It can't happen. Like if you are noticeable enough to either be like you because you're funny or because there's something like unique about you as a comic, inevitably, like that was my thing yesterday on Facebook. I posted something about like, I have been unfollowed 20 times or unfriended. And I was like, I don't know what's happening. Like I literally talk about cats and grab my boobs on stage. There is no reason why any of this should be controversial or divisive. And people just unfriend me left and right. And I actually got blocked yesterday, which is what I got blocked.
That is weird.
By a comic. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but like, I know it's probably,
can I
know
say
it's not
fuck
me.
Him on your behalf?
Yeah. Oh, sure. I'm just saying, like, and I know deep down it's not me. I just think it's a funny thing.
Oh, it's you.
You bitch.
It's you. It's not me.
It's you.
No, I deep down know, like, even if it is me, it doesn't have anything to do with like, because there are comics who go out of their way to like, be inflammatory and be like, poke the bear.
Yeah.
But I'm the kind of person who just does my shit. And I'll tell you if I think, like, if you ask me point blank, like, do you think I'm good or bad? I won't be like, yeah, you suck. But I'll be like, you know, you could work on this or that.
Some people take that so badly.
And I'm snotty. I'm snotty and I'm, you know, but like, I don't know, man. There's just nothing about me that's inherently like.
See, I've had a few people say, like, one time I flat out admitted that I blanked out in the middle of a set and someone came up to me afterwards. It's a guy that I'm friends with. I like him. And he said, you should never do that.
Yeah.
And my initial response was kind of to be offended. Like,
you know, trying to help.
But no, he was right.
Yeah.
You don't need to know that my mind just went blank. It doesn't help the next joke coming up. And I mean, there's some comics that I really respect. And when they pull me aside and say, I like that joke, but you could do this. Oh, that's like, you know, that's like.
That's free advice from a really good comic.
Yes.
Yeah,
when Bill Squires pulled me aside and said, I like this joke. You could have done this better. Thank you.
Mary Santora is that for me.
Okay.
Like
she's awesome.
I went and did a show with her in like Malvern back in October and I opened for her. And afterwards she was like, it was good, but like know about these four things. And I wasn't even remotely offended. I was like, oh my God, yes. And I took out my phone and started writing it down because I was like, holy shit, Mary Santora is telling me like how to get better.
Right. No, exactly. You've seen her, you know, she opened for Dave Attell.
Right.
Someone who opened for Dave Attell can tell me what I could do
Jen
better.
Kirkman,
and I'm going to listen.
And she opens for so many
another,
people.
McDonald, drawn a blank on her first name.
Heather.
Heather McDonald.
Yeah.
I love Heather McDonald.
Mm-hmm. She's open for her.
She had a special called I Don't Mean to Brag. And she kept hitting that punchline and she had so many jokes in there. These are jokes that are, you know, she's a woman roughly my age, but the show is probably 10 years old. So these jokes, you know, she's married telling those jokes. So I'm not her exact target audience. And I'm just in tears laughing at this lady.
See,
just
that's
crushing
good.
It. Oh, yeah, she's great. And I'm thinking literally like, I'll be doing Jess's show next week, sitting next to Mary Santora, who will then be opening for Heather McDonald, Dave Attell. Like, I'm one degree of Kevin Bacon away from fucking Dave Attell.
Yes. I saw.
So that's why I think I love hanging out with these crowds. It's
right.
Like, this is fun.
Well, that's it. You're networking, and you're networking with people who are, like, legitimately, like, on the precipice of, like, breaking into stardom, and that you don't get that advantage a lot, which I think
certainly
is...
Certainly not as a chemical engineer working for...
I mean, that's ultimately, I think, the thing. So you said you feel like you're progressively getting less tentative about things. Do you ever does it register in your mind like, oh God, I'm being this way? Or you know, do you ever notice yourself being hesitant about things, or is it just kind of reflective? Like,
it's more reflective. Okay. It's more like, would I have done this 10 years ago? Probably not. So, yeah, like I said, I have way more regrets than I have regrets of what I didn't do than what I did. So anytime, like I tried taking jiu-jitsu about 2 years ago, and I fucked up my hip and good doing it. But well, I mean, just I walk around.
Yeah.
Sometimes it pops out a little bit, but again, way old for entering into this game, and yet I'm doing something that I would never have done 10 years ago. And I did it just because I wanted to try it. I wanted to try to get in shape. And I was so felt so bad if anyone ever sparred with me because I sweat so much. I can't make a joke out of it. Why don't we joke out of the first person to use a waterboarding as a submission move?
That's actually really good. You need to try that
I'll try to set it up.
That's a pretty good one.
It's close to true.
That's not terrible.
They're like,
that's
what is happening right now?
I don't care that you're choking me. Just stop sweating on me, you gross fat fuck.
That's fantastic. So, like,
I'm trying out material on your show right now.
No, this isn't the place. Where the hell else are you going to do this? That's the thing. Like, because when I go on my friend's podcast, like Dwayne Duke has a podcast that I just did the other day. I was like, oh, hey, here's all the places you can find me. And this is the time and you can find it. And this is the station you can turn into. And like, I turned it into an old 20s actress.
And all Jess all the time.
Yeah, all Jess 24/7.
That's a pretty good 1950s radio voice there.
Like, I don't even know what it's useful for. I don't even know what era it's from.
And today, the Giants will be playing the Yankees for...
Definitely like mid to late 20s.
Is that what it is? Okay.
I think it is. I think 50s was being way too progressive.
That's the thing, though. Like, you watch old movies and you're like, they all just kind of talk a certain way and they don't talk like that anymore.
You see?
Yeah.
Listen here, you see? You're going to crawl in front of
her. A little Cagney action going for you there?
Yeah, exactly.
So we were talking about how a lot of it is like retrospective for you as far as your tentativeness. And you talked about how like, you decided to try jiu-jitsu. When did you start comedy? When did you try to start doing comedy?
I started comedy, it would have been April of 14. My dad died in August of 2013. Really unpleasant story. He was on blood thinners and not taking really good care of himself and fell and bled to death. And it was a struggle to watch him taking such bad care of himself and to argue with him about it. And then, you know, here's a guy who'd been kicking me in the ass my whole life, telling me to do things right. And I'm watching him going, what the fuck are you doing? And this is an actual conversation. And sorry not to get dark. So he passed away and I went off the rails for a little while. I mean, I was working still, but I was just, you know, power drinking and just not in a good place. And then when I finally shook myself up, I said, you know what? You've always, there's a true story. A girl I worked with when I was working at Burt's Bees, who was much younger than me, and gorgeous, told me I was really funny. She said, you should do stand-up comedy. I'm like, there's such a big difference between being funny in a conversation where you're just people bantering and getting in front of a crowd of people and trying to make them laugh. I'm like, I would suck at that. And she told me, if you do it, I'll come out and see you. So I'm like, I'm going to do stand-up comedy. So she comes out and sees me. And I always did. I always loved stand-up comedy as an art form and wanted to do it. But that was kind of like the...
What pushed you in?
That broke the tentativeness. Is her saying... I'm going to bring my gorgeous way younger than yourself up to Cleveland to see you. So I booked myself at Barrio.
Got booked at Barrio.
And told her about it. She said, yeah, I can't come up that week. But
but you were doing it but anyway.
I was pot committed, as they say in poker. And so...
that was the first place I actually ever saw you was at Barrio. I remember
that. I used to do Barrio quite a bit. And then the problem is when I'm working... a show on a Monday that starts at 10 p.m. When you got to be doing your thing, at 8 in the morning the next day.
Oh, yeah.
That's rough.
I have a friend that's been out of comedy for like 6 or 7 years, and he just messaged me that he was thinking about doing a show at Barrio. And he's like an in-house counsel guy someplace, some corporation. And I was like, okay, well, be aware that it's Monday, and it starts at 10, and you probably won't get up there until at least like 11, 11:30, and you live in like... the suburbs, so it's going to be like another half hour home. So just be like, either be prepared for like how much coffee you're going to have to drink the next morning, or be prepared to call in because like you're going to be...
You work harder in comedy than I do. You do more shows, you host shows, whatever. So I don't know if do you still get that buzz after a show? Like when I'm done doing a set, I am wired for a couple hours.
I don't sleep.
I just can't. I mean, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But... when you do a show at 11 o'clock on a Monday night and you're still like, you know, still riding that high at 1 a.m. and like, and the alarm's going off at 7. So good luck with that, Sparky. I like doing your show. I like doing East End Bistro because those are earlier and on more convenient nights.
Yeah. And that's what I love. Like we started that show at 8 and then Spider moved it back to 7. And it's like the perfect time because it's between football games during football
season. I would come out way more often to watch comedy, like come see you.
Yep.
If it was earlier, because I have to be at work at 7:30.
Right.
So it's just too much for me, especially in the winter. Once it gets nicer out, I'm just kind of like, let's do this thing, whatever.
So the last time I did Jess's show, I planned to spend my whole Sunday getting ready. And my buddy called me because he's a Steelers fan. He wanted someone to watch a Steelers game with. So rather than focus on putting my set together, and I had a bunch of new stuff that I didn't get to do because my buddy got me drunk. My co-host for my podcast got me drunk, and I showed up at your show way more hammered than I wanted to be.
Was that was the open mic night, wasn't it?
No,
it was last week. It was just last week. I booked you in the showcase. That's right. Well, he comes up and he hugs me and he's like, "I've been drinking," and I was like, "Okay, good."
And her response was, "You can go up first." I was like, "Thank you so much."
That was a good
call. That was definitely a good move. Definitely a good move because it didn't get better from there. And I mean, I was okay with my set, but it was still kind of a blur. And I remember leaving a little bit early, and I felt so bad for pulling the plug. But I was like, hammered, calling an Uber, get me out of here.
I love the etiquette. Like, the people understand, like, the basic etiquette of, like, a lot of people try to stay for most of the show because that's what's polite to do.
Yeah.
Because so many other comics who are later on.
They're not just going to come up on stage and be like, all right, bye.
So I love that, like, it's just cute to me how, like, even an hour into the show, someone will come up and be like, I got to go. And I'm like, you performed an hour ago. Like, you put in your time. It's completely fine. Like, don't apologize.
It's so different when it's a show, like, you know, you've got some actual humans, not all comics in the room. So you're entertaining people who want to be entertained, not a group of other comics.
It's definitely a different vibe. I've been at Tap House when it was just, you know, all of the comics and then a couple people and then me. And it's all the comedians are like, woo, you can do this. And there's no one like hearing the material for the first time.
Right, exactly.
I always feel so bad.
One time, one of the other, Logan Rishaw, another local comic, he wanted like a canary in the coal mine. So he asked me to get up on stage with him. And he's like, I'm going to judge based on how many laughs I get out of Jim. And he looked at me and goes, unfortunately, you've heard all these jokes before.
So
and
Jim sat next, like he was almost serenading Jim. Like Jim was sitting next to him on stage and he was telling his jokes to Jim on stage. And then he was trying to see like how Jim would react. And it was so cute.
It was interesting. Amazing. It was fun. But again, that's part of the camaraderie of I like these people and I like, you know, being part of this community. So it's fun.
Good. I'm glad that, I don't know, like that, and that, I mean, that's the common thing that comes up a lot in every one of these episodes is like how people got into comedy and how that has to do with sort of the default things that sort of make them up. And especially when you talk about things that are like, can tend to be inhibiting, like, you know, shyness, tentativeness, all things along that spectrum, it's even more sort of interesting and admirable to say like, because that was Cindy's thing too. Like Cindy was kind of in a place where she was like, fuck it all, I'm going to start something new. And I feel like that's one of the cool things about comedy is it's just so, for people, it's such a dramatic thing. It's like the entertainment equivalent of like skydiving. Like it's so daring to people.
Yeah.
And the fact that not only people do it once, but then they keep going back and doing it over and over
again. I love when I'm dealing with stuff in the corporate world and people say, oh, you're going to have to give this talk in front of 20 people. Are you nervous? I get up and tell jokes about my dick in front of perfect strangers when they're drunk. You think I'm worried about talking about shit I actually know about where I don't have to be entertaining?
Yep.
So.
I don't have to make a single one of these people laugh. I'm
right.
Good.
Exactly. Exactly.
One of the favorite quotes I heard recently was in the most recent Seinfeld Netflix special. And this is just so apt, as he was saying, like, I can talk to all of you, but I can't talk to any of you. And that is like so perfectly like a way to describe a lot of comics. Like I'm very much like the antithesis of that. Like I'll talk to anybody and I'll talk their ear off and they'll be like, holy shit, what's this bitch doing? But like a lot of comics are very much like they can get up in front of a room full of 500 people and be charismatic and hilarious as fuck. And then you walk over to them and you're like, hey, great set. And they're like, hey, thanks. Like, I don't know how to handle this.
Totally different
and then
person.
You get them around other comics and then they light up again and they become like a totally different person.
I went home to Buffalo for Christmas and I got to perform in Buffalo, which is the first time I've done that. And again, I have family and friends up there. And they would say to me all the time, like, I want to come down and see you. I'm like, please do not drive 3 hours each way to hear me talk about my dick for 5 minutes. It's just not a good use of your
time. There's YouTube for that.
Right. And I'm like, I will feel terrible if you do that. No, it'll be fine. I'm like, not for me. So I got to go do it in Buffalo. It went really well. It was fun for me because I could do old jokes. I'm like, none of you have heard any of this before.
Isn't that great?
Oh, it's so awesome.
Yeah.
It's so awesome. When you see a really big comic come through town and do a show at, you know, Capitol Theater or Hilarities or whatever, And then a year later, you watch them do their 1 hour special on Netflix. Yeah. And you say, I watched him work on that joke.
Yep.
I'll never forget. I That's watched awesome. Ramon Rivas do his Comedy Central special. Uh-huh. And it was, for me, I'd been doing comedy, you know, on the same shows as Ramon for a couple of years at that point. And I'm like, I'm watching him do this joke going, he made that joke perfect. And I watched it. I watched it at Barrio, and then I watched it at Booth's.
I've seen it evolve.
And I've seen it polished. Like, now he's got it, you know, on the big stage, and he's fucking nailing it. That's awesome. Hear people say all the time, you need to do this a lot to get good at it.
Yep.
And it's like so many things. It's so true because
you know,
anyone who says they were good from the beginning, they're lying. I went back and listened to one of my early sets not too long ago, and I erased that fucking thing so fast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Because I remember in that time thinking, that went really well.
Well, and what's interesting is like people's origin stories and like how they keep on going. Like with mine, I did really well my first time ever. And if I'd even just done like mediocre, I probably wouldn't have done it again. And Cindy was saying, I think something similar is she had a really good night her first night. I especially admire though those people who started out and didn't get a laugh for the first 2 to 3 months they started. And it's like, holy shit, you're That's either rough. Delusional you know, or you just
my,
knew.
My first one ever, I got a couple laughs. And again, I felt like I did well. But then I had the stupid thing in my head that every time I go up to at Barrio, I need to have 5 new minutes because...
Me too.
And my third 5-minute set was fucking horrible. Yep. And that's what I listened to. And I was like, okay.
Reassess.
At the time, well, again, I'm doing this for fun and doing it for camaraderie, and I'm happy. But yeah, when I remember doing that, thinking, oh, that was so different, so new, and so fucking awful, because you really just didn't have any of it worked out. And that's why you do it again and again and work it out.
I admire you for recording your shit, because I'm still like trying to get in the habit of recording my stuff.
I've stopped.
You need to keep doing.
You're right. Especially when I show up at your show drunk and don't want to hear what it actually sounded like.
What happened?
What did
night?
I do there?
Well, yeah, right.
Why is everyone acting weird around me these days? We got to wrap this up, but all I do want to thank very much our guest, Jim Lalka. Jim Lalka, you are the host of or co-host of the Whiskey Congress podcast, correct?
That is correct. Whiskey Congress on iTunes and Stitcher and all those platforms. We have a YouTube channel. Have you heard of the stupid one chip challenge thing?
Yeah, I saw that. I saw the invite. I think I'm like not able to go, but that's amazing.
I will be eating a Carolina Reaper chip at the Barley House downtown. This probably will air after that. But if I don't survive that, it's been great doing your show. It's supposed to be brutal.
Are those the ones that cost like $45 a chip or something ridiculous?
Oh, my
actually,
God.
Only on the secondary market. They're supposed
I want
to be like
go
five.
And just watch.
Saturday,
just
2:30.
You said it's at Barley House? Oh, Saturday, it's like 2:30. Walking distance from my apartment. I probably should just go because it's like literally.
And I will be humiliated by my friend who's a, you know, female who's about half my size who claims she can eat anything spicy. So her plan is to be as stoic as possible.
Challenge accepted.
You know, yeah, exactly. We're both Bills fans. We got drunk. I mentioned this. She's like, oh, we should do that. And then it just
And you're doing it for the podcast?
We're doing it for the podcast. Yes. I'm going to publicly humiliate myself for the for the show's value.
Hell yeah. That's what we're all doing this for.
Exactly,
man.
Exactly.
Here are my flaws. Please stare and point and laugh. That's
Thank you very much for having me. It's been
yeah,
awesome.
Of course. Yeah, thanks for coming. Gege, where can people find you on social media?
I am on Instagram at g.g.chick.
C-H-I-C-K.
Yep.
Because onomatopoeia. you can find me at EpicFaul, E-P-I-C-F-A-U-L, on the Twitter and Instagram. You can also find me at Avenue Tap House every Sunday at 7 p.m. You'll probably also see Jim out there, either drunk or otherwise. I want to thank OK Pants, at OK Pants, on literally all the social media. He did our logo. I want to shout out to Pete Milk, Milky Way Recordings. He makes all of this sound amazing and also puts it on the interwebs. And I also want to shout out to our network, Above Below Entertainment, El Jordano Diablo, and its parent network. I don't know if you guys want to be called that, but fuck it. Lousy Weather Media. So I want to give shout outs to all them. We have been doing lately a sound effect to end our shows. And my thought, I've been thinking about this throughout the podcast today, So a couple weeks ago, we did the penis game. I don't know if you've ever played the penis game.
I heard you talk about it on your show.
So we played the penis game. And then what I think we need to do is not quite the penis game, but on that level with labes.
Okay.
And what we can do is kind of like a little bit like a barbershop triad, I guess, since there's three of us. So you could just be like,
labes.
Yeah. So you could do low, I can do medium, and I can do high. Do you want to try that, Gege?
Let's do it.
All right, ready, Jim?
Labes.
Oh, are we all doing it?
No, wait. All right, wait.
I was confused by what was happening.
You just go labes, and I'll go labes, and then you go labes. Okay, got it? All right.
Labes.
Okay, love you. Bye.